Hello, everyone. Welcome to Unmuted Generations. I'm Ryan Mew, and in each episode, we focus on expanding our horizons and personal knowledge of the world to cultivate a happy and healthy lifestyle. Today, I'm joined by Gario Harrison. For those of you who don't know, Gario is truly a wizard when it comes to marketing operations, management, startups, and really nerding out on the business side of the creative economy. He's a partner at Curious, helping businesses take steps to address their challenges in branding, marketing, and product development. And also Closers Media, a community empowering those interested in sales to learn how to close more deals. In his spare time, he's committed to giving back and involved in several organizations educating the future. So super glad and happy to have him on today. Gario, man, without further ado, how's it going? Thanks for coming on.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Ryan. Looking forward to it.
I'm really glad we connected. We connected through a mutual peer, Colin Mitchell. And really, this whole podcast, the thing I love to do is bring on entrepreneurs. According to data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, a lot of people are starting small businesses around this time. With COVID, they don't have to drive on their commutes. About 20% of U.S. small businesses, though, actually fail within the first year. And by the end of their fifth year, roughly 50% have faltered. Entrepreneurship for a lot of people is really intimidating. They see it more as a side hustle as opposed to like an all-in type of situation. So, you know, as somebody who probably started working out traditional jobs and stuff, what pushed you to really go to that next level and start your own business and be an entrepreneur?
That's a really good question, man. I think the thing that really led me down the path is, you're right, there was a stigma around quote unquote entrepreneurship a few years ago, right? Like you were considered either unemployable or just someone that always had a bunch of ideas and trying to get it off the ground, a hustler, if you will, like just trying to make it happen. And I think there's been a shift into kind of what that means and the value of entrepreneurship as a skill, where you're able to identify a problem, identify a creative solution to that problem, and then create a business around delivering that solution to customers, right? So the definition of entrepreneurship has evolved. We even have companies hiring entrepreneurs in residence, right? You're fully employed, but you're doing entrepreneurial things. I think for me personally, it really came down to really focusing on what a job was for, right? Which was for our family, right? Securing our future, making sure that our son was provided for, and the typical things that parents want, right? And just realizing that the mind shift for me and entrepreneurship was realizing that the real business or the LLC, if you will, is actually the family, and your job or whatever it is that you do is more your revenue streams, right? And if you look at it through that lens, it's less about being a quote unquote entrepreneur and more about gathering the resources to live the life that's right for you and your family. The last thing I'll say on that is right before I started my own company, or this most recent company, I worked for a co-working space. So in a co-working space, you see all sorts of entrepreneurs, all sorts of businesses, big corporations that would put folks in charge of innovation in there. And they all kind of, the one thing they had in common was this mindset of creating value and being intentional around what they want out of life. So yeah, I just ended up taking the leap after seeing that the stigma around it has gone away and the possibilities that it could provide in the future.
Got it. So it's mainly focused around having the opportunity to be more intentional and authentic with your work, because I think a lot of people sometimes they think of entrepreneurship as a cash cow. Like Shark Tank is a great example. I mean, obviously there's plenty of entrepreneurs who are passionate about their ideas, and it's definitely showcasing entrepreneurship. But if you look on the other side, playing devil's advocate, that some individuals are going in there, I have the $1 million idea. And sometimes they even say, hey, I'll sell my business at 100% equity. You could own the entire product just so I could have some cash. And really what you're saying is like, hey, entrepreneurship should be seen more as like a cultivation of ideas, and pretty much like it's almost like a family. Like you should build that family up and use it to support your own family at the end of the day.
100%. But let me ask you this, man, like I've admired kind of the things that you've been dabbling in. What do you think about the whole idea of entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely an interesting thing. I think everybody should try to be an entrepreneur once in their lives. I'm a big believer in that because it definitely teaches you responsibility that the school and the education system doesn't always teach us. I believe that our education system generally teaches us how to be a specialist, how to focus and be really good at one subject and get a job, work corporate for 40 years, and then sip mojitos in Hawaii. Like that's what basically school teaches us to do. And even though that's the safe route, it's not necessarily the most fulfilling. So even if you're starting a side hustle, like entrepreneurship doesn't necessarily mean like, hey, leave your day job where you're making money and providing for your family and start something new. It's like, hey, maybe take a baby step, start a blog, start a podcast, start a shop on Etsy. Like even something as small as that, that's an example of entrepreneurship. And it teaches you accountability. It teaches you how to leverage new technology. And the other thing that I think that entrepreneurship is very important, that it's not leveraged enough, is it teaches you how to be like the ultimate generalist. I think sometimes people think like you got to be the best at a particular subject, but I think really everything kind of intertwines. Like an example is I work in marketing, but I still have to understand sales. I can't just create resources and say like, hey, here you go. I have to understand like what the end customer is looking for. So everything kind of intertwines, and I don't think our education system necessarily preaches upon it as much. So for me, I'm a big believer that like, hey, even if you have just like the smallest or slightest opportunity to become an entrepreneur, go for it because it'll be fulfilling and you'll also learn a lot. You know, in terms of like entrepreneurship, like what's your thoughts on like being a generalist versus a specialist? Because I think one of the things I always hear for somebody who wants to start a business is, hey, that's a cool idea, but you got to find your niche. But at the same time, if you're starting a business, I mean, you may be the only person in charge. You may handle like the invoices from accounting to like, hey, I'm meeting customers, I'm talking with them.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think when I think about being a generalist versus specializing, I like to think of it in terms of the core value being created is something that you should specialize in, right? Like you should be able to, either in your job or in, if you're the business owner, sure, you got to be able to deliver what it is that you're doing by yourself, right? If it came down to it, could you do it on your own, right? And do you have a deep enough understanding to do it well, right? But to your point about entrepreneurship, you also have to understand all the moving pieces that go into, at least have a working knowledge of all the interconnected things that matter, right? You know, for example, if you're selling a product, you have to understand sales, right? You may not be the ultimate salesperson, but you got to understand what a really good salesperson looks like, right? You may not be the one day-to-day in QuickBooks, but you should be able to ask intelligent questions of your bookkeeper to know how your business is going. You may not be the one hiring or staffing, but in order to figure out whether or not you can afford to hire someone, you got to understand cash flow. So even though you are the one, and just use building websites, for example, you are the one that knows how to build a website. And you are the one that when a website comes through the door, you're the one actually doing the work. So therefore, you have to be deep in it. You also have to understand all those other pieces if you want to run a successful business, right? And it actually makes you a better employee, because if you're responsible for, let's say, wireframes, right? You just run with the website analogy. If your job is to create user experiences and design wireframes and so on, you are better at doing that if you understand what percentage of the organization that function contributes to revenue. Right. If you sell websites, and websites are really, really successful websites that you guys build, is delivered when the UX is done correctly, and this is the profit margin that you guys are able to create as a result, knowing that makes you understand your value within that organization, even though you're not the one running the books or selling the project or any number of other activities that happen within the organization. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. It's a good point too, because it kind of hits on this moral that like everything pretty much intertwines. And it's good to just have a general understanding, because you don't want to make ludicrous or ridiculous request to like people in other departments if you are in a position of leadership, because you don't quite understand the subject matter that they're working on. It's good to have an entire area that focuses on value. And one of the things I kind of wanted to touch upon is the intertwining between marketing and sales, because you did mention that, hey, we do have to understand sales a bit. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people think of sales as a really big, scary word. Like they think of somebody in the 1980s who like shows up to your door wearing like a trench coat or something. Yep. And they're trying to sell you snake oil. Yep. How did you really learn about sales? And like, how did you learn how to use sales to create value for yourself and also just your ventures?
Yeah, I literally remember like it was yesterday. The company that I worked for is Coworking Space. And I was responsible for, on the marketing side of things, on the leadership team for our marketing qualified leads and the sales qualified leads, right? Wasn't responsible for closing them, but you know, how many of the right leads were coming into marketing and how many of those leads were qualified to have a sales conversation, right? That was my area of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And we would have these meetings with the rest of the leadership team, and we would see these numbers, and they'd be, 1 minute they'll be on track, the next minute they'll be off track, right? And really not understanding why that was, it was kind of a function of needing to figure that out so that we can have like consistent, a plan for consistent revenue. I talked with all my marketing colleagues, because these were my peers, what they were doing, and nobody had a satisfying answer for me, right? A lot of it was the latest and greatest tech hack. Growth hacking was what was hot at the time. A lot of it was about volume, less around convincing people of the value of whatever product we were selling, which was at the time was co-working spacing, right? Either off-base or individual membership. And one of our members, his name's Mikolai Bedour and Allison Bedour, now they're good friends of mine, wanted to start just an education series called Coffee and Closers, right? Which was basically a meetup for folks interested in sales. Super basic, right? And as a part of my role in marketing, I was looking at it purely from the standpoint of, okay, if we can bring people into the space, then we have an opportunity for conversion, all that good stuff, right? Thinking of it as a marketer. But during that time, as Mikolai and Ali brought these top performing sales folks through as guests and hearing their thoughts on the art of sales, I realized that my idea of what a salesperson was, to your point, was completely wrong and outdated, right? There were salespeople that were introverts. There were salespeople that had systems. There were salespeople that could woo a room. Like they came in all different flavors, right?
Yeah. But
the one thing they had in common was they were intentional about their integrity and making sure that what they were selling was actually helping the customer, right? And everything else around it was in service of that one goal, right? Matching value to the customer. And A, that shifted my mindset or the way I thought about it. And then I just got to know Mikolai a lot more, and he became a sounding board for really understanding marketing through the lens of a sales leader, right? A top performing sales rep. What from his perspective isn't marketing doing, right? How can marketing better serve sales? And that just made me a much better marketer. And that right there is how this whole idea of bringing sales and marketing together in my mind came to be. And that's literally what the two companies that I'm a part of are 100% focused on.
Yeah, a lot of intentionality behind it, I'm reading. We're using right. That word a lot. And yep. I'm not sure if, with me, I try to be intentional with all my actions. I can't like place a significant point in my life where I'm like, hey, this is like where I decided, like that click moment per se, when the light bulb turned on and I'm like, here's when I become intentional. But one of the things that I was thinking about when you were saying that is that when I was in school, I didn't really, intentionality wasn't really a thing. You know what I mean? Like I finish a PowerPoint presentation and I do a report, but I do it to get a grade. Obviously, I want to get a good grade. But it's not like I'm going to go look back in 10 years and be like, oh, that report could help out this person or whatever. At the end of the day, like for somebody who's really just starting out, let's just say like they just graduated college or a marketing professional, how would you say like somebody should practice like intentionality and like really get that their foot into the door to grow their skill set?
In marketing?
Yeah. In marketing, sales?
Yeah, I honestly forget the profession. And this is what I did. So I'm going to share my path. Whether or not that's going to work for someone, it's definitely a personal choice. But I became obsessed with this idea of like narratives and storytelling, right? As a part of marketing, and applying that same kind of thinking to my own life and then working backwards into, okay, well, what needs to happen to make this true was a super simple exercise that I've been doing. And I've been doing it for a few years now, and it's been working out great. You know, an example would be in 10 years, I want to really write it out as if like it's a diary entry in the future, right? What do you want a day in the life to look like, right? And then working backwards to, okay, in order for these things to happen, what do I have to have in place in order to do that? And you can do that for 10 years. This is how I do it. 10 years, 5 years, 3 years. 1 year. And based on that, then you break the 1 year down by quarter, right? And it's not a set in stone thing. It's a living, breathing document, but it's a way to establish some sort of a North Star. And it makes getting out of bed in the morning a lot easier, because you kind of know what you're working towards, and it allows you to be aspirational, right? So in terms of intention, it's put a stake in the ground few years in the future and work all the way backwards to what you're doing today. Because it may not be what you want to do, right? You may not be doing what you enjoy, but if you can see that doing it will get you closer to that North Star, then it's worth the time.
Yeah. And what you're describing, it's almost like kind of like a vision board, right?
Yes. Yeah. You can visually represent it. The tool that I use, Donald Miller has a, it's not a webinar, it's an online course called...
Like a masterclass?
Yeah, it's called Hero on a Mission. And it's a refined version of what I described. Like, when I saw it, I'm like, geez, I wish I'd seen this. It would have saved me some time. systematically walks you through it versus what I did, which was I just picked a random date in the future and did that exercise working backwards.
That's good. I mean, that's just a good way to look at it too. And just to start your day off in like a healthy way, like personally, because I remember before, I remember I was experiencing burnout a little while ago. And I was like, why am I experiencing this? You know? And the reason why is because every morning I'd wake up and I would literally look into my, I have a little planner because I'm old fashioned where I actually write stuff down with a pen. And I would look in it and I'd say, what do I have to do today? But I wouldn't necessarily look at like where I'm going to be however many years. For me, it's always been like, oh, it's so unpredictable. But I even remember when I started college and I graduated in 2019. It was one of those things where I always had the goal, like I'm going to graduate cum laude. Like it's almost like I envisioned it in my mind as if a basketball player was making a game-winning shot. Like I envisioned, hey, I'm going to walk up on stage, get the cum laude, have that medal wrapped around me. And so I'm big on visions. I'm definitely big on visions. And I'm also big on really just taking your time and learning how to like decompress. As somebody who's very passionate about like, obviously your line of work, I mean, you have two different things that you're involved with. I mean, you help mentor, you have a child, and then obviously like a great relationship. Like, how do you decompress?
Well, I can share that. But before that, I want to hear more. I'd love to hear how you identified the burnout and what did you do to combat it?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So with me, at least, like the way I identified the burnout, it was the funniest thing, Gario. What happened was I was like working a lot. I recently got promoted. So it was one of those things where I was taking in so much information at once that like I almost felt like I was in a circadian rhythm. Every day I'd wake up and it'd be like, oh, I'm doing the same thing over and over again. And it's when you feel like that, you hit a certain point to where it's like, okay, like I know I'm in this thing, but I know that like next week will be better. And it's literally the same thing. and it's not cool. I literally had to, I visited my friend in San Diego because she got engaged and I'm like, oh, awesome. And visited her and same type of thing. I mean, I was driving all the way there. When I was on my way back, nobody was in the car with me or anything like that. And from San Diego down to where I live, it's about a 2-hour drive. So it's just 2 hours. I'm not going to be working on my emails while I'm on the freeway going 70 miles an hour. So I'm just sitting there listening. And I just turned off the music and I took like a deep breath and I'm like, wow, I am like burnt out. Like I'm spending all this time working and stressing, frankly, and not being efficient with my time. Whereas I could be spending that time with my family, walking my dog, focusing on my personal health. I even did the thing that I'm pretty sure everybody does where they look at their gut and I'm like, oh man, I'm getting a little fat here. So it's one of those things where I decided I need to start taking care of myself. If I don't prioritize myself, then everything else isn't going to fall into place. But the way I started doing that, honestly, is I started meditating a little more. So every morning before I would wake up in a frantic rush, even though I was working remotely because of coronavirus, I'd start up my computer, get started right away. But really what I'd start to do is wake up a little bit earlier before my day started. And then instead of putting in like the extra hour, I would focus on meditation, focus on kind of just harmonizing different parts of my life, potentially go on a walk outside. I'm a big walk person, don't know why, but it just, maybe it's just getting a breath of fresh air in the morning. And that really helped me. And then I just made a couple rules for myself. Hey, I'm going to block out time on my calendar to like dedicate this time to relax and not touch my phone or potentially work. Because my problem was I was giving everybody access to like my calendar to book meetings. And I love meeting people, but there comes a time where it gets too much. And I don't want to kind of just be in there, but not really be there and give like minimal effort. I want to make sure I'm paying like maximum attention. I mean, I guess for anybody listening who is suffering through burnout, it's always good to just take a step back and go somewhere or do something that doesn't require any technology, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just detach for a little bit so you can get a little bit of perspective, at least just enough to go, what do I need to change to feel better? Just the release the pressure valve, if you will.
Exactly. And I think sometimes a lot of us succumb to the pressure and we don't necessarily realize it. It's not like one of those things. Burnout isn't one of those things where it's a downward slope per se. It's more of something where it's a very sharp turn to where like you realize, like you may be working and you may be burnt out, but you may not even realize it. And then all of a sudden you'll get in a situation and it'll hit you like a brick, basically. Mm-hmm. You'll be like, wow, I'm burnt out.
Yeah, 100%.
Definitely, man. You know, in terms of like with me, like I try to decompress through walks and obviously meditation and just spending more time with people like I love. Like, how are you able to decompress from the business and the high pressure of, I guess, just being a partner?
Yeah, I think it's kind of three main tools that I use. Yeah, and I'll just kind of share them in order of how I use them. So I use the full focus planner. So I'm just like you, right? I like to take a step back from technology to actually like plan and think. So it's a manual planner, and I just find it, the system itself, I find it just super helpful, right? So it's through two basic concepts, which is big threes. So three big things a quarter, three big things a day, and then everything else kind of underneath it, right? So if you know what your goals are, you kind of use those part threes to get the stuff done. Doing that, the last thing before I sign off from work for the day, I know what's coming tomorrow, allows me to kind of just close the chapter for the day, knowing what I have to pick up tomorrow. So that's the first thing. I found once I started doing that, I was able to like wind down and actually be present with my family, because I've already thought about what's coming next. So I'm not like playing Legos, but also thinking about what's happening tomorrow. So I just know that it's there. And there's a whole bunch of, there's Asana and there's all other things, calendar that's used to figure out what those three things are. But knowing what the three things are each night for the next day, super helpful. I'm with you. I use the Headspace app every morning.
Headspace is awesome.
It's just, And depending on how I feel, I'll pick a meditation, right? There was, when the whole pandemic was getting started, like I had a lot of anxiety about what was going on. My family's in Jamaica, so how are they doing? I had a lot of open loops in my head. And I spent a lot of time in the mornings with the managing anxiety track that they had in there. And it helped me get through it. It helped me organize my thinking. Now I'm using the creativity one, right? Because now things are good. There's a lot of creative energy that I want to deploy in different areas of my life. So I'm using the creativity one right now. And that just centers me for the morning. Sometimes I do it, literally I wake up before I even get out of bed, I put it on, and it's the first thing that I do every morning. Right.
I love that you just said that, because some people, when they think of the word meditation, they think of, we have to sit in an area with scented candles, sit on our little mat, something like that. Like, just hearing you're able to just do it from your bed, it's perfect. Perfect to me.
Yeah. No, here's the funny story about that. Like, I had the exact same thought, right? Like, I had this, just like people have this caricature of a salesperson in their head, I had a caricature of the person that meditates in my head. Candles, you know, lots of organic things.
Dark rooms, but there's still like lights, you know?
And I just realized that, yeah, the guy who founded Headspace, I forget his name, Andy something, he wrote a book about that. And it was the first book that I read that was like, okay, all the things that I was thinking about meditation, it's not that, ironically, that deep. It's not that deep, right? There are ways to do it or to get started that doesn't require overthinking it. And that's what got me into the Headspace app and figuring out what to expect. And the last thing that I do literally every morning before I touch, kind of start hitting the phones or doing anything else, is I hit the Peloton and just get the heart going, get that endorphin hit, and then go tackle the day. And I just found those three things in order systematically, it makes me a better person. It makes me a better partner to my coworkers and colleagues. It makes me a better husband, and it makes me a better father. Like, it's just a better son. It just allows me to just have the energy to do the things that are important, have the mental bandwidth to be able to focus on whatever I'm working on in a given moment, whether that be a project for work or just hanging out with my family. And then just knowing that I have thought through and have documented the goals that I want to have is where the full focus planner comes in. So I'm never wondering if I'm on the right path, because I have a clear understanding of what that is.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I would love to get a Peloton myself, because I've heard that those things, one, they work you out, but two, the body is pretty much like a temple. I'm a big believer that, like, when I don't exercise, at least, like when gyms first closed with the whole pandemic, I was so angsty. I just felt super stressed out. And I would always, I remember I'd go on like ridiculous walks, 3 miles or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no reason to do it. I'd be walking over the freeway or something like that.
Being able to get out and move your body. Yep.
Exactly. But, you know, the full focus planner is also a really big thing. I really like that you talked about, hey, you should write 3 things a day that you want to accomplish. There are times where planners, when you buy them, or if you were to find one online, they have so many different lines and categories to write things in. And sometimes mm-hmm. it gets too much and it actually works against you. You think you're being organized, but you're actually stressing yourself out because you're just looking at the tremendous amount you have on your plate. So it's really good to focus on, like, basically the things that you will be able to accomplish for today, for sure. And then everything else is kind of extra, or you could spend the time focusing on things that are more important to you.
Yeah. So I was a big GTD nerd, right? So getting things done, David Allen. And that what you described right there was kind of the big trap, right? Like, I had these elaborate systems, digital and analog, and I spent more time organizing the system than actually getting anything done. I think especially kind of driven folks like us, like, we can find ourselves getting sucked into the myth of efficiency and productivity at the expense of progress. And that is where I think the full focus planner served me well, in it forces the thinking because you only have three things, right? So those three things had better be important, and they had better be moving you forward in the right direction. It did take a while to let go of trying to make the three things so big that encompasses so much, right?
Because— oh, yes. I've dealt with that too. We're geeking out on efficiency right now.
Exactly, right? So yeah. Like figuring that out, and really, they have a lot of really good videos and mindset stuff that it comes with the planner that just really help. Yeah, just put a lot of that stuff into context that I found really helpful.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the name of the planner is called. It's a very popular one, but basically it has no, I kind of do the same thing, except I write everything down myself. So it's, mm-hmm. Here are the three things I want to do. I want to really just look at a blank. Oh, Moleskine. Moleskine is the journal. So I just use a Moleskine journal and I just write everything down myself. But kind of similar to what you do, I just try to write my day and say like, hey, you're only doing these three things, and then just kind of sit your butt down, because I'd like to think of myself as a driven person. I know you're obviously a driven person. And in terms of like where your drive actually originated from, like, what was like the upbringing and like your early beginnings, and like how did that drive really push you to be where you are now?
I come from an entrepreneurial family, right? I grew up in Jamaica, kind of saw what it looks like to have a family run business and discipline around doing that. So my mom started a prep school in Jamaica, and still around today, still going well, still thriving. But I saw what it took to get that going in the early days, some of the decisions that she had to make sure that the school didn't compromise her vision for it, but also delivered quality education to the students. So again, back to what we were talking about before, which is making sure that your product is good and going deep on it, and then surrounding yourself, or at least having an understanding of everything else. She had to do that, and I saw her do that. She's an incredible educator, but she now had to understand cash flow and all these other things. My dad was a police officer, and watching him, you know, grow through the ranks and just the discipline it took to do that and to lead the officers that he would be in charge of, but taking kind of the earnings and putting it back into the family business so that it could have a shot at thriving. And as a family, really being on the same page about why we're doing this and, you know, why it's important. And being a part of those conversations is something that has shaped a lot of my professional drive. It's how I think about the work that we do for our clients, right? Because I'm not just looking at it as them being a revenue stream or a project or some cash flow. I'm looking at them as business owners and entrepreneurs and people that the decisions that they make to work with us they're doing this with the hopes of having their business not just survive, but thrive. And what does that mean for them beyond the business? And I take that stuff very seriously. And it all comes from just watching my mom do it, knowing how she went about making decisions and how she went about prioritizing things, and seeing that. I used to, after school, go sit in her office while she's like finishing up for the day. So I saw, you know, what that took, not just the output of it, but what it actually took, and that, you know, reinforced my work ethic. And just the fact that being an entrepreneur can actually have an impact on the lives of others.
Oh yeah. I love that. Your parents seem like very caring about others, they have a lot of integrity, and I'd assume you learned a lot by like example, which is really awesome to hear. I kind of had a similar situation. My dad, he was in sales. He worked at Dell Computers. So he's like a sales exec over there. And he'd always take me to sales meetings and have me meet all the guys and stuff like that. And he'd kind of show me the era of like business and like why business is important, how business is like pretty much providing for our family in that aspect in terms of a monetary sense. But my mom, fortunately enough, was a stay-at-home mom. And there's like a little misconception about them. And my mom, I'm very, very thankful for like her, because she was the type of person where when I went to school as a child, she'd always volunteer. She'd take me to places and you know, kind of just teach me like the importance of the personal balance. Like, hey, you may not understand this now, but it's really important to stay organized, like write stuff in your planner, because she knew that I'd always like, my planner would always have like little dirt on it and stuff like that, because I'd always leave it behind in school and stuff.
Yep, yep.
So she'd always teach me really a lot of the personal things. And it, honestly, it wasn't, I was a decent student in elementary and middle. But then when I got to high school, because I came from a very small school, like I went to a private school, the people there, it was like 60 people my entire life. Then you go to like a school where there's 400 people and you're meeting like a lot more people that looked like me, a lot of different people of different ethnicities and trying to be the cool kid. And it wasn't honestly until I hit college to where I was like, oh, I'm going to use all the skills my mom and my dad taught me early on. Like now it's go time. I want to make them proud. Obviously, like they did a lot of work for me. So it's obviously like my time to use the talents they have cultivated in me to make the most of my life. I think something that is very important is you could be the best student in college. You could be the best person in sales or marketing, like props to you. But it's just as important to like give back and look at people and help people, and not help people necessarily through, you know, selling your $500 masterclass on TikTok.
Right.
I mean, that's not cool. You know, having coffee chats with people, doing mentorship. I know you're involved in mentorship, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Education is something that we just, it's just ingrained in our family. I do volunteer with a group called the Silicon North Stars to just basically take my network and the access that I have and the things that I've learned and just sharing them with the next generation of tech leaders, right? So these kids are high schools. They're going into high school when they start the program. We take them to Silicon Valley or just introduce them to technology companies and paint a picture of a future in technology for them and then are with them throughout their entire college, or sorry, the entire high school career, continuing to give them access to insights, the companies, just so they know what's available. So when they go to make college decisions, they've had access and have talked to a lot of different people in a lot of different areas in technology, not just coding, but everything else that surrounds it, so that if they want to pursue a career in tech, they have an idea of what that is. And yeah, that need or that drive to give back came from my mom. Like I can literally trace it 100% back to my mom, and the discipline to know what I'm able to do, I can trace that 100% back to my dad. So I think that's super cool that you too have that, a caring mom that you are absolutely right. Stay-at-home moms don't get enough credit because the amount of, I mean, just think about what it takes to run a household. There's cash flow. There is, you know, your management, like all these skills that you end up learning in that environment, you get to see what that looks like from a loving mother, right? So you now have empathy for other people when you have to do those things. And then, dude, I didn't know your dad was in sales, man. That's a superpower right there. Like,
oh, I know. Yeah. He honestly was the person that helped me break out of my shell a little, because I was a shy kid with encouragement from my mom. And obviously, you know, I don't think sales is a genetic trait by any means, but I think it's one of those things where it's like, if you're around it enough, you eventually kind of learn how to do it. And eventually, if you talk with all these people who are older than you and you're like a young 12-year-old kid, but you get to attend a Lakers game because of your dad or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, that's always pretty cool, you know?
Yeah. Oh, good stuff, man.
Yeah, it all comes down to showcasing it at the end of the day. It really just showing people different experiences and like being able to tell, to give advice, but in a very like personal way that's meaningful to them. And I guess as a last question, I'd like to ask you to know, obviously our world is changing. It's only 2021, but so much has happened so far. Like what skills or advice would you have for somebody who wants to focus on their own personal development or professional development moving forward throughout this year and the next few ones?
Yeah, I would say just take the time to really, really understand yourself. There's a lot of self-reflection and just define what makes you happy, what makes you come alive, right? Where you get your energy. And then think about how is there a part of it that can be turned into a business or a passion or a role in an organization that you can put that energy towards. Because at the end of the day, I think the pandemic has taught us, realigned our values around the things that are important to us. And I think figuring out what that is for yourself is kind of the first step. And then after that, I encourage everyone to really understand managerial finance, or at least personal finance, wrapping your arms around. I think you had a guest talk about finance recently too.
I did. Yeah.
So if you have a clear understanding of your finances, and then the next level up from that is managerial finance, how it runs in a business, you're just so much more equipped. You can figure out, can you afford to start a business? You can figure out, can you afford to leave this job and go do something else that brings you more joy? Unless you know where you sit cash flow wise as an individual, you can't make those decisions. And then the second thing that I would say is, like, nerd out over sales, like really understand the art and science of sales. And it is an art and a science, because the ability to sell or to be comfortable in a sales environment, and I'm going to steal this from Mikolai, is it's superpower, right? It gives you the ability to advocate for yourself. It gives you the ability to articulate your value. It gives you the ability to, if you decide to start your own business, to get those first few customers, right? If you are a startup looking for funding, it gives you the ability to craft a compelling story that someone can believe in. And yeah, you're selling yourself at that point. So those two skills, getting clear on what you want to do or what you want your future to look like, and then finances and sales, like those two things, everything else can be learned or outsourced. But those skills, everyone should invest in learning.
Thank you so much for saying that, because at the start of this podcast, I was talking about why businesses that failed, and the number one reasons why they actually fail are cash flow issues. Sometimes they think finance and sales are at opposite sides of the spectrum. Maybe if you work for a really big conglomerate, yeah, like I understand your perspective, but you do have to have some understanding of it from a personal perspective, like for sure. But also from a professional perspective, those really help. So thank you for that. Thanks for coming on, Gario. Like, I really enjoyed this conversation, man.
Dude, Ryan, man, thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
Awesome, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. Like I said, I'll add all your links to the description section of this podcast if people want to follow your socials or keep up with your journey or content over time. For all those listening, I appreciate the support. And if you enjoyed this episode with Gario, feel free to leave a rating, review, and subscribe to the podcast to stay updated with the latest episodes. I'll see you guys later. Enjoy the rest of your day.